Good morning, everybody. I'm Stephen Blake, and I run a business called Respondability, which is about how people could have the choice to actually respond in the way that you want. I think we've all done something where somebody said something to us and we walk off quite upset, and then 10 minutes later we think of that brilliant reply that we should have said, but it's too late. And the same happens with your emotions, because your emotions aren't greatly under your control. They're actually run by an automatic process that runs a program that you've preset it with sometime in the past. And so when something happens, we're busy doing nothing, and then suddenly we feel angry or upset or sad or whatever, and then we're looking around for why we're suddenly feeling like that. And the reason for this is that we actually take everything on board through our eyes and ears, and we absorb and filter it, and we're only looking out for what we really think we're looking for. But everything else goes in. And so something will trigger off an association from the past and actually make you feel in a certain way. But it's too late once you're in it. So for instance, I had a claustrophobic attack about a year ago. And even knowing all I know, I couldn't do anything while I was in it. Once it had come on, it was too late. I'm in that sort of fear, the panic, the can't breathe, the chest is going, everything else. And you'll learn lots of different techniques that you can do if this emotion comes on. All right, you know, now I can breathe, I'll do this, and it makes you feel a little bit better. But the point of what I do is to actually reach in there and find the program that sets you off to be like that, and actually correct that program. So the thing that would normally trigger you off doesn't actually trigger you off anymore. So it's not like having to have a technique that covers it up. You actually just, something happens that would normally send you into that sort of, oh my God, and it doesn't. Right? You don't even have to look for it. It's not there anymore. You just can't find it anymore, because it's a program you used to run that you no longer run.
So,
today's talk is about your attitude as your life. Now, it seems to me that kids are born with different attitudes. I've got twin grandchildren, and they're as different as chalk and cheese. And so there's something there, actually, from the moment of birth that makes you different from one to the other. So one's outgoing and boisterous, and the other one's quite shy and clings to mummy. Just so happens it's a boy and a girl. So it might be hormone, it could be anything, but we all set off slightly different anyway. And then what happens through our life is that we actually start to develop and we learn. And before we're six, we actually take on 80% of everything we know about life we learned before we were six. Now, I'm going to get you to do some simple maths now. I want you to take 5 off your age. You don't have to shout it out, but that's how old your programs are, or 80% of your programs are that far out of date, and you're still running your life with them. Okay? Now, some of them are fine because you learnt the right things, and some aren't helping you. So it's about actually adjusting those ones and starting with the ones that are the least helpful first and getting rid of those. Because if you want to be happy, there always seems to be something in the way of, well, I'll be happy when. And we're always putting off happiness. Well, when I fix this, when I'm doing better this, or if I don't have these thoughts, then I'll be happy. So later on, I'm going to talk about how to get happiness, but today I'm going to talk about how you actually get rid of all these things that are in the way of getting happy. And these are your programs and your attitude. And your attitude is your life. So you've learned all these things before you're six. Now, if you were brought up in a warm and loving household, that's brilliant, because everything you see is a good model for life. If you're not fortunate enough to be brought up in a good and loving household, or you're neglected or abused, then you're learning different things. And you think that's how life is. And you think you have to please other people, because then they're not bad to you. So you're learning things in a different way. So you start off with this thing of, you come into the world with just a survival system, with your protective knowledge of how things work. Now I'm going to talk about the mind and the way it works, or the brain. You can make the two things the same. I don't make it technical. I don't talk about different parts of the brain, but I talk about different ways the brain works. So there's two ways the brain works. One is that it's conscious. So everything we're aware of is the conscious part of the brain. And everything we're unaware of is the unconscious part of the brain. Now, most people have heard it called the subconscious. Now, I don't like to call it the subconscious, because sub means under. And it's not below consciousness. Your unconscious is actually way above your consciousness. It's just, so you can't see it. So you think subconscious, oh, it's below consciousness, I can't see it. But actually, it's so way above your consciousness that you can't see it. And what I've helped people to do is talk to their unconscious in a natural way. This is quite unique to me. This is not meditation. This is not repetition. It's not affirmations or affirmations. This is literally learning how to talk to your unconscious. And you talk to it like you would talk to any normal human being. But you talk to it as your best friend, because it is your best friend. Now, we all have things in our head, these voices that go, you look in the mirror and you go, oh God, I'm ugly today, or I'm fat today, or whatever. That voice is not your unconscious. This is one of the programs running that you learnt before you were six. Somebody has told you that you're unworthy, or you're fat, or you're ugly, or you're clumsy, or whatever. And that's just that repetition of that voice coming back to you, saying, oh, don't forget. Just in case you forgot, you're fat and ugly and clumsy. One of those. So it'll come back to you. That is not your unconscious talking. So your unconscious gets a lot of bad press. But your unconscious only ever does for you what it thinks is best. Now sometimes that can be quite horrendous, what it does for you. But it still thinks it's for the best because of the alternative. So I'll go back to my example of being claustrophobic. My claustrophobia came from a fear of needles, and my mother then telling me that if I did have the injection, I'd get polio. And I said, what's polio? And she said, well, polio is, how can I describe it? She said, and she tried to describe an iron lung. Anybody who's younger than me probably don't know what an iron lung is. So she described it a bit like a pirate's chest that you put into, and only your head, your hands and your feet stick out the bottom. And the idea was they put air in and out of it and made your lungs work. I mean, obviously we've got the tubes down there, don't they? But to me, when she described this thing that I visualise as a pirate chest, I visualised being doubled up in it and the lid closed. Right? So you stop breathing, don't you? And you're in a confined space. So I forgot where I was going with this story. So my protective system at that point, from that visualization, said to me, if you ever go in a confined space, you will die. Right? So this is why you have phobias and things, because you get an irrational fear. So it's all right to be frightened of confined spaces, because there might be danger in there, or it might be dark, or somebody might close the door, it might seal you in. But that's just a normal fear. But when you have a fear of going into a lift, that you're going to die if you go in a lift, I mean, that's irrational. And all phobias are irrational, because you're not frightened of the actual thing that you say you're frightened of. You're frightened of the fear and the panic that comes from it. So, has anybody here got a phobia? Just one, two? No, come on. You have to do more than shove your head. Right, about half of you. Okay, so what I'm going to tell you is that if you just think of that thing for a few seconds, that you're phobic of, right, and just see the difference it makes to you, right, so you can't be frightened of that thing, you're actually frightened of the thought of it, because the only thing you've just produced is a thought. You haven't produced a thing that you're frightened of. Right? So you're never ever frightened of that thing, you're frightened of the panic attack that comes from. So your survival system says, if you see that, then these terrible things happen. Because the first time this ever occurred to you was a horrendous event that you took as a learning event and said, oh, when that happens, I feel like this. It's horrible. Right? And so you keep rehearsing it then, and then you visualise it, and you go, oh, when that happens, it's horrible. And so every time you think about it, you actually add to it. And when we first think of something, we have to do it consciously. And we make a little neural pathway that says, oh, right, when I think of this, it works like this. When we keep doing it, we actually increase this neural pathway. It's a bit like the old switchboard where you put in plugs and you get through to a line. That line gets thicker and thicker and thicker the more you use it. And so you end up with this pathway that now goes from a pathway to a motorway. And so when you think of that thought, it's straight there. It can come into your head and it goes, oh yeah, that's terrible. And then you go into this, ugh, I feel horrible. But my system was saying you will die if you go in that space. So as soon as I started getting some logic back into me, it took about 4 hours, I said, right, I know all the things that triggered this off. And I spoke to my unconscious and I said, the thing you've given me that you think is protecting me is actually harming me more than going in a confined space. Because if I go in a confined space and there's light under the door, there's air. And if there's air in there, what's harming me? I mean, I'm in a little rock. You know, what's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that. Only the thought of the previous time and the thought of being in this chest. So I just spoke to my unconscious and I said, you can release me from this now and you can break all the connections with the thing that you gave me, because the thing you're giving me is more likely to kill me. Because in those 4 hours I went through depression, anger, fear, and I, at one point I thought I was going to die because my chest was beating so hard and I thought my heart was going to pop out of the chest. And I said, that is likely to kill me. A confined space is not. So I want you to switch this round now. I want you to understand that the confined space is no harm, but what you give me isn't. It's really harmful. So I want you to turn it off. And it literally turned it off just like that. So you can talk to your unconscious, and it will do everything possible for you.
So, getting back on track to your attitude of your life.
So we learn all these things along the way. Obviously not all of them parents. And we then start to see things in a different light. So if you start to think that people are against you, and I've got a very good friend who does this quite a lot, and I've done quite a lot of work on her, and she's moved on in leaps and bounds, but she still has the attitude that if she sends a text to somebody and it's important, that somehow, by osmosis, they should know it's important. And if they don't get back to her, she makes this massive story up of how they don't like her anymore. Right? So this is just her attitude. And it could be a million and one reasons if you send a text to somebody that didn't reply, like they didn't get it. So we have conversations like, oh, so did you ring them after you? No. I wouldn't. They didn't let me reply. Did you email them? No. So she doesn't actually contact them. So she's got in her head this attitude that everybody's against her. And because of that, it does seem that everybody's against it. And I think we've all got friends who can tell you these horrendous stories every day. And they go, oh, what's happened to me today? And you go around and you have half an hour of hearing all this misery. And if you go around the next day, you'll hear another half an hour of misery. And quite often it's just like, and you know what happened today? The postman was 10 minutes late. 10 minutes late! It's like the whole world's exploded. And other people, things happen, and it's like nothing happened. They just carry on, they bounce through life. And they're the people you're more likely to visit, aren't they? Because you actually come away feeling better. And some people just sort of like suck all the goodness out of you. They tell you so many negative things. And here's a little tip for you. It's called the monkey on the back. Has anybody come across the monkey on the back? Right. Or the monkey on the shoulder. What happens is you talk to somebody and they offload all the problems onto you. And they go, oh, you're a really good listener. And they tell you all these things and they go like this. And they're sort of, oh, and then they feel better because they've offloaded a bit and offloaded a bit more. And then finally they've got this monkey off their back and they've given it to you. And then they go, oh, I'm off now. Thank you. And you're there with this monkey on your back feeling miserable because you've just had all this negativity. And all you need to do is straighten yourself up and actually go, not my monkey. Right? And it actually works. Because the way you hold your body actually says a lot about it.
In fact, if you're ever watching TV
and there's a character on there and you can't quite understand them, mimic the shape of the face. Right? So if somebody on telly and they're always like, just do that for a few seconds, and what you actually feel is how they feel. Because the way we're designed is, how we feel and how we show it is actually the same on everybody. It's just that we've got slightly different muscles and things, so it shows up slightly different. So I'm going to get you to do something now. Okay, so everybody can think of something happy? Can you all do that? Nod your head. Okay, so I want you to all think of something happy, and I want you to pin your shoulder back, and I want you to sit upright. Sit upright if you can, and I want you to think of that really happy thought. Okay? Got something happy? Right, now, I want you to try and hold on to that as you go into what I call a depressed state. So I want you to now curl up your body, try and hold on to the happiness, come on, and curl down and bring your body forward, and try and continue feeling happy. I want you to stay there for a few seconds. Can you feel just as happy down there? No. Right, I want you to think of something slightly... No, stay there. I want you to think of something slightly negative. Not too sad or unhappy. I want you to think of something really negative. No, really. Slightly negative while you're down there. Okay? And when you've got that negative thing, I want you to go back in the other position. I want you to go upright and bring your shoulders back. Okay, and hold on to that negative thing. Can you hold on to it? No. Okay, anybody holding on to it? No. All right, we'll have a bit of a shake. Let it go. So what we have in life is this thing that our attitude is the way we present ourselves. So if you present yourself in such a way, and it's more subtle than I show, so I mean, this is to me, this is happy. Right, and this is sad, and then this is depressed. Because when you're depressed, you don't want anybody else in your life, so you're absolutely locked up in a ball. And then you become more open as you get happier, and then if you're really joyous, you're absolutely open to anything. Anybody can say anything to you, it won't offend you in any way, shape or form. So your body shape is a big indicator of it. Now, it's not as obvious as this, and you can't read people and go, well, they're miserable. I have a friend who actually looks like this when she's smiling. And she actually looks like it. She's a very pretty girl, and I've never, ever seen her smile. In fact, she gets so many comments on it that the other day on Facebook she posted a thing saying, somebody says I never smile, here's a picture of me and my dog, and I'm smiling. And she still looks like that. Okay, so some people have just had their mouth sewn on upside down. That's all there is to it. But in general, what we give out, and it's also the vibrations you give off and everything else. So if you're actually giving off this feeling of positivity, it changes how people react to you. And the same with a negative or a sort of down in the dump sort of reaction. So whether you're a pessimist or an optimist, you'll always prove yourself right. Because what will happen is the other person's reaction to you. And they'll react to how you look or how you... And they'll sort of... And some people will maintain their integrity and do whatever they feel like doing. But others will actually bounce off you. And it only starts off with some negative statement, like, oh, it's really miserable, isn't it? And then it sort of seems to go downhill all the way from there, doesn't it? Whereas if you go, oh, I thought it was brilliant today. You see, I'm not sort of... adverse to bad weather. I don't think there's such thing as bad weather, just inappropriate clothing. So I went to the store the other day, and the woman behind the counter, who works there all day, said, oh God, isn't it miserable outside? And I said, well, it's wet. And I said, are you working all day? And she said, yeah, I'm working all day, miserable. And I said, yeah, but just think, if it was sunny outside, you'd be wasting a sunny day while you was at work. You're actually missing out on a rainy day while you work. And she went, oh yeah, totally change. So just this change in, slight change in attitude makes all the difference. And there's a thing called reframing, which is a brilliant way to take yourself from one state to another. I went to an event where it was one of these where you go and get coffee in the morning and then sort of everybody huddles around the coffee table and you have to sort of get in and sneak in. And then you work your way into a gap. And so I ended up in this gap with just a woman, not a big group of people because there wasn't room. And I thought, okay, I'll chat to her. And she was like, and as soon as I looked at her, I thought, oh, all right, yeah. Well, I met the best of this. So I said, good journey, Dale. Mm. And I was a bit stuck for something to say because I don't think it's more. And I said, I hope you don't mind me saying it, but you don't look very happy. And she went, I've just been made redundant. Now, the typical thing to say then is, oh, really, sorry to hear. But that joins in with them. So I said, brilliant! And she looked at me as if to say, you bloody idiot. So she said, do you not hear me? And I said, yeah. Tell me again. She said, I've just been made redundant. And I said, brilliant. And she said, what? And I said, just think of all the opportunities you've got now to do all the things that you've always wanted to do and never had the time to do them because of that job. And her eyes darted about. And I counted at least a dozen things that she thought of in that second. And she seemed to get 4 inches taller. Her shoulders came back, and she smiled. And she's still a friend of mine. Surprise, surprise. So, now we have this thing about, well, I could be happy if all my friends, or if other people treated me differently. Well, let's put it like this in life, that you can't change other people. You can only provide an atmosphere where they can change. You can't actually get anybody to change. And I'm very good at getting people to change, but that's because they come to me saying, I want to change. Okay? But if somebody doesn't want to change, they won't change. And they won't see the point in it. Because you see, if you've been pessimistic all your life, you do understand that everybody is against you. You know that. It's an absolute fact. And somebody who's optimistic thinks everyone in the world's lovely. And they know that as a fact. And it's no different. That could be the same person on different days. It's just your thoughts actually change things. So, I said to this woman that has problems with what she thinks other people think about her. I said, you know what people think about you? And she said, oh yes. And I said, well, you're wrong. You haven't a clue. I said, I've known you for a long time now, and you're absolutely useless at mind reading. Absolutely useless at it. Because every time you tell me something and you tell me it's a problem, I ask you questions and we get to the root cause of it and it's always about you. It's nothing to do with that. I said, so you think that people think you're horrible. And because she often mentions this, which is a bit of a clue. So she mentioned that people think you're horrible. And I said, well, do you think people are horrible? Well, they are. So can you see which is the chicken and the egg? If she thinks everybody's horrible, we all think everybody in the world is like us. So if we think everybody's horrible, what we're actually saying is, I think I'm horrible. And everybody's like me, so everybody is horrible. And there's absolute proof of it. So I said, well, no, you see, what happens is you're actually imposing on them what you think about yourself. And she had a traumatic thing when she was younger, which brought this on. So I said, you're imposing on them what you feel about yourself. And you're actually just joining in. You're actually bullying yourself, but using other people to do it. So I said, so what you think they think is wrong. Because they could think lots of different things. They might actually think you're horrible on occasions, but not everybody's going to think you're horrible. And I said, so does that prove it to you? And she went, no. I said, why not? She said, because somebody told me I was horrible. I said, ah, right, let's work that one through then. If what you think somebody else thinks about you is what you think about yourself, when it's about the other person and they say you're horrible, who are they saying that to? They're saying it about themselves. So what somebody else thinks about you is absolutely none of your business, right? Because some people will love you and some people will hate you, and there's absolutely no difference to the way you are. Just people from their own internal readings of things will actually start to say, right, this is a bit, it's always about them. Right? And everything you project onto somebody else is all about you. Okay? Are you with that? How are we doing for time, Diane?
7:26.
Okay. Let me have a swig of water. So, part of the issue is, to have a nicer life, I want you to start being nicer to yourself. Because if you start with yourself, everything else will sort itself out. And it's very difficult for some people to be nice to themselves. We get into people-pleasing mode, or a lot of us do. And I did give a talk about this whole topic of givers and takers. Because in relationships, you tend to have a giver and a taker. And it sounds like, you know, one's naughty, you're the taker's naughty, and the giver's, like, really good. But it's not like that, because it's a perfect balance. If somebody's a real giver, wants to give of the time and emotions, and I mean, not particularly talking about gifts, but give of the time and energy and everything else, and please other people, then the ideal person that they can meet up with is somebody who will take that off them and go, oh, that's good. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I'll have a bit more of that. But the trouble is you end up in an unbalanced relationship. Because what you do is you give all the time to the point where you actually get, can't think of another word, pissed off with doing it. Because this person now, when we first met them and you went, give, and they went, yeah, I haven't seen that. Oh, thank you very much. They now just go, yeah, I haven't seen that. Or they'll actually do what a girlfriend did to me once. I bought her cigarettes every Friday night, 20 cigarettes. Hell of a gift, isn't it? And I went there one Friday night, and had time to go to the shops, and she went, where's my fags? That was the last time she ever got bought it. Because people start to take the mickey. So they start sort of doing, well, I'm taking, you know, I was a taker in his own, I'll take. And it's not their fault. It's actually the fault of the giver not being able to receive. Because givers are terrible at receiving things. Right? So somebody will give a giver a compliment, you look very nice, and they'll go, oh, I just threw it on. And things like that. So you get this terrible sort of reaction back to it. And if your partner gives you a compliment, and you say, oh no, I'm not, or I'm bloody ugly, you know, or I'm fat, or whatever, what have you just done? If I give you a gift now, I go, here's a gift for you, and you go, I don't want it. And I'm going to go, here's a gift for you every bloody night, too. You've got to keep knocking it out of your hand. You go, say, well, even put my hand out and give you a gift. Right? So we actually train other people to behave around us. And that's based on our attitude. Right? So as soon as you start to spin it the other way around, and this is what we're going to come to in a few minutes, I'm going to do an exercise with you that will take anything that's negative in your life and turn it into a positive. And I'll show you how to do that. What I don't want you to do is catch yourself out doing things wrong all the time. Right? Because that's probably what you're already doing. You don't actually you don't pick up on things and go, right, well, I may have this, but I've got a beautiful face. Right? Nobody does that. We actually, and in fact I've mainly dealt with females for weight loss over the last 8 years. And the most screwed up women I've seen are the prettiest. It's a real strange thing. Because the really, really attractive woman will come and see me, and she will come in, and within 5 minutes I know every bit of her body that's awful. Right? Because she'll tell me. And bits I can't see. They'll go, oh, don't look at this, I've got this, here. Don't look at, oh, and I've got terrible toes. I've got shoes on. I mean, why do I need to know that? I don't need any of that. And I think quite often,
very attractive females get picked on by other women who go, well, she's not that bloody. She might be pretty, but she's got a big arse, or something like that. And so they'll actually get picked on because, although she's looking like she should think she's perfect, she's actually got flaws. So they'll pick out flaws in other people. But it also means that's because you pick out flaws in yourself. So as soon as you stop picking out flaws in you, you don't need to do it to anybody else. It's sort of the same old thing of beating yourself up by proxy. You actually pick on somebody else because that makes you feel a bit better, because they've got something wrong with them that you haven't got. Well, why not stop picking on yourself when you don't need to even think about that in people? Just accept people for what they are, actually just people. So, is anybody here going to admit to being a pessimist? Anybody pessimist? Right, well, we've got two. Okay. Is everybody else an optimist, or are you just sort of somewhere in between? Any optimists here? Which is quite funny, we've got an optimist sat between two pessimists. So you sort them out when you get out of here. Okay. Okay, so what I'm going to show you now is a technique. And if we have time, I'll take you into a more detailed technique. So this is the sort of base technique, if you like. And it's going to be based on just your hand and flipping your hand over, right? So anybody got any problems with doing that? No? Yeah? You can do it with either hand. Right. Okay. So, what I want you to do is think of something negative about yourself, or something that you do that's negative, or something that you want to turn off that you constantly do that you think, I don't want to do this anymore. Okay? Has everybody got one of those? You're not going to have to tell me, by the way. It's fine. Okay? With most of the sessions I do, I actually take people back in and sort out major problems. They don't have to actually tell me what happened. So I'm not a counsellor. I'm not there to listen to you and sort of, you know, hear the whole story, because then that sort of impresses it more on you because you refresh it. Right? I actually take people back to things. I can see how they feel. I watch people closely, and then I deal with it, and then it goes. Right? It's as simple as that. In fact, quite often when I deal with people, they can't remember what happened to them. So what did I help you with the other day, darling? She has no idea. So she told me a problem, I helped her with it, and she hasn't got a clue what it was. I didn't wipe the memory out, I just dealt with it so that it doesn't have to keep coming back on this loop that you have running this old program that says I'm like this. That loop's gone there. Right? So when I ask her what it is, it's like, why would she know? The loop's not there anymore. Right? So, now you've got this issue that you want to deal with, it that you see as negative, right? I want you to think about what is the opposite of that. Okay? I want you to think of the direct opposite of it. Now, sometimes you won't see a direct opposite. So, like, if you think, like, weight people, people on a diet do. If you're on a diet, and I quite often do this, I'll sit on the settee and then I'll think, oh, chocolate biscuits in the cupboard. And then the next thought is, mustn't have chocolate biscuit. Right? So as I'm saying, mustn't have a chocolate biscuit, I feel myself rising and going, no, I mustn't have a chocolate biscuit, mustn't have a chocolate biscuit. And this is because your brain doesn't understand negatives. It mainly thinks in pictures. So as soon as you think chocolate biscuit, you've actually seen a picture. So I just want you to all visualise it. Packet of chocolate biscuits now, okay? Right? And as you visualise that packet, you start to feel a bit packaged for chocolate biscuits. So if you actually say, no, I mustn't have a chocolate biscuit, if you understand the brain doesn't understand negatives, it's still seeing the picture of the chocolate biscuit. So when you go, mustn't have a chocolate biscuit, it's going chocolate biscuit. So the more you say, I mustn't have a chocolate biscuit, you keep heading towards the kitchen there, because you go, I mustn't have a chocolate biscuit. And then when you get to the cupboard, you go, oh, I mustn't have the chocolate. Oh, right, okay. Well, I'll just have the one then. I won't eat the whole packet. Can you see what direction this is going? So you then go, right, oh, yeah, I'm eating the whole I shouldn't really be eating the whole packet. And then you go, but at least I haven't started the next packet. Start the next packet. Then off you go. Right? And then you finish it. Right. So your brain doesn't understand negative. So the opposite of thinking, I must have a chocolate biscuit, isn't, I can have a chocolate biscuit. Right? It's, well, what do I need? If I think I need a chocolate biscuit, what do I actually need? And it could be that you're thirsty. It could be you need company. Because we're never hungry when we're busy. Have you noticed that? You can work as much as you like to eat, you can work for 10 hours running, and then suddenly the hecticness stops and you go, oh, I'm starving! But you didn't think that while you were busy. So quite often the brain's fooled into this boredom thing of chocolate biscuits in the cupboard or I don't know, or whatever. So, has anybody got a negative there that they can't think of a positive to? Or have you all got the positive to it? Anybody not got that? Okay? Right, so what I want you to do now is pop your hand up. Right. Okay, now, I want you to imagine that you have negative tattooed across there. Can you remember the old love and hate on the knuckles? Right. I want you to imagine you've got negative on there. Now this is called association or anchoring. We're actually going to make this so that every time you do that, it's because you're thinking of something negative. Now, I want you to imagine, I want you to take out of your head that negative thought, and I want you to put it on your hand. Right? And just place it there and give it a form and a shape and just really visualise that it's come out of your head, it's gone on your hand. And now I want you to do a little trick to show how it's not in your head anymore. I want you to pull it towards your head and notice how the feeling increases. And then I want you to put it out as far away from you as it can and notice how it goes away. Alright, we've all got that. If you need to, do it again. It gets stronger when it gets towards you and it gets weaker when it goes away. That's because it's not in your head anymore, it's on your hand. Now, you just carry on holding that there for a second. I'm going to tell you what to do next, but we're going to do it quickly. In a minute, I'm going to get you to visualise the back of your hand, and it has positive written on it. Right? But we're going to do it like that. Okay? So when you're ready, I want you to put it out as far away from you as you can, and then flick it over. Right? Have a little shake. Okay? Now, I want you to bring that negative thing back to your mind. If you can. If you can't, you've already sorted it. If you can bring it back to your mind, notice how it's slightly less negative or less of a feeling. Okay? So if you've still got it, I want you to pop your hand out again. Put that negative thing there, give it a shake before, and then flip your hand over and notice how it's gone on the floor. Okay? A little shimmy. Right? And there. Now I'm going to start doing it faster. Hand out, put it on there, flick it off. Hand out, put it on there, flick it off. Put it on, 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 flick it off. Right, all put hands there. Put your hand up if you've still got your negative thought. Right, okay. Do you mind sharing with us what it was? You don't have to.
I'd rather not.
Okay. Right. Have I got time, darling?
Twenty-two.
Fine. Okay, we'll do the increased version of this. Okay. And you can all join in. Now, I've got you something slightly negative there. Now, I take something quite horrendous now that we want to get rid of. Okay. Are you all willing to do that? Or something just a little bit more negative than the last one? And you can carry on the same thing. What I want you to do is pop your hand out now, but I want you to cup it. And now just take a few deep breaths. Just silence your mind down. Just let it wash things in and out. And if thoughts come in, don't try and chase them away because that gives you something else to think about. So just let it come over you as you take a few deep breaths. And I want you to take that negative thought you've got now. And I want you to place it in your hand. And I want you to really make it intense. I want you to give it a colour. And that colour could be solid or see-through, I want you to give it a shape. I want you to give it a texture. I want you to give it a weight. So bounce up your hand up and down. Just feel the weight of it. The more you can get all your different senses involved, the better. Just really feel that it's in your hand now. Give it a smell. And if it's a revolting thing, give it a revolting smell. Okay? So you've got shape, colour, texture, you've got a weight to it. Just really envision it in there. And now feel the difference. As you pull it towards your face and realise that it's increasing its intensity towards you. And as you stretch your arm out, it starts to fade away from you. And at full extent, I want you to now pull your hand back towards your face and then throw it! As hard as you can. Okay? Throw it. Okay. Now, I'm going to do this quite quickly now, so I want you to pop your hand down again. I want you, if you can, to visualise it exactly the same. Anybody got a faded one there? Okay. Start to see it now in your hand. Start to realise that it's fading in front of you. The colours are going away. The smell's going away. The texture's going. It's becoming just a smooth item. Right, the shape's becoming quite formless, like fog. And as it changes into that shape now, I want you to pull your hand back and throw it at the front of the room. Okay. And now we're going to do it very quickly. So pop your hand out, place it in there, really visualise it, feel it, what's left of it, and throw it away. And again. Put it in there, throw it away. 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 In there, throw it away. In there, throw it away. Quite often nobody come in the room after this. How's it going there?
It's a bit better.
Yeah, there's a change in the face. Come and see my stand for a chat and I'll really say thank you. I'll put it for free. Okay. So, your attitude is your life. Your attitude is a mixture of everything you've ever done from being a child onwards. But sometimes you've learned the wrong lessons. And so if you think anybody's against you, take that feeling away and throw it away like that. Because they're not. There are lots of wonderful people in the world. And the only thing we hear on the news is the bad stuff. We hear about people dying and killed or things that we don't really want to know about. And if you concentrate on more things that are love and joy, and if you see people in a different light, that they are just individuals, the same as you, with a mixture of everything in the background that makes them really complex people, because that's what we all are, then you can start to look at them differently. And I hope you'll have a better life.